This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new unrivaled league, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Greg Bordonero from the Harvard Business Journal joining us every week at 8:50 for the Connecticut Business Blend. Greg, good morning. How are you?
Good, Brian. How are you?
I'm great. We've got a bunch of really interesting stories to get to. First is possibly troubling, a bit of a spike in business bankruptcies here in Connecticut. I guess it's the question is why, and then what kind of companies are doing it?
Yeah, so last year Connecticut had 114 companies, businesses file for bankruptcy, up 28% from a year ago. That's actually the biggest year-over-year increase percentage-wise in more than a decade. The reality is during the post-pandemic period, bankruptcies in Connecticut were really low for businesses. In 2020, 2021, there was only 71. Pre-pandemic 2019, there was 200. Oftentimes, years before that, it was over 200. So what you kind of saw was the pandemic aid that kind of buoyed a lot of businesses that maybe would have normally gone out of business or filed for bankruptcy. And then, you know, just like the government or state government's having issues as this pandemic aid is running out. Now that sort of the pandemic aid is out of the private sector as well, I think you're seeing some companies that maybe were on brittle ground. We were able to tread water a few years with some PPP funding, the Paycheck Protection Program. That money runs out, and all of a sudden, you know, the companies that maybe were teetering on the edge are falling off that edge. And then, you know, that combined with the high interest rate environment and inflation, could spell trouble for companies. In terms of the types of companies, a lot of it's small businesses, a lot of it's LLCs. What we found was, you know, mom and pop shops, things like that. There was a landscaping business. There was a tire auto shop. So traditional, really small businesses, the mid-sized companies are the ones that we're seeing that we saw filed for bankruptcy last year.
Now, just real quickly, are these companies that are restructuring or just going under?
So the vast majority, so 96 out of the 114 filed for Chapter 7, which means liquidation of assets, means they went out of business. The majority of bankruptcies in Connecticut that were filed last year for businesses were the Chapter 7, where, you know, you basically liquidate your assets and you go out of business.
Right, as opposed to Chapter 11, which is a restructuring. We're talking with Greg Bordonero with the Harvard Business Journal and the Connecticut Business Blend. The Stanford apartment market, now, it's kind of booming, and we have obviously a huge housing shortage here in Connecticut. Is this mainly Manhattan folks looking for more economic ways to live, and they're commuting just straight back to New York?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. You know, Stanford was probably the biggest beneficiary of the pandemic in terms of population movement. People who are younger people, maybe who were living in New York City, got too expensive or, you know, was too crowded at the time. They saw Stanford as a good alternative. So, you know, basically over the last 10 years, Stanford's added 15,000 apartment units, which was a 56% increase in their overall units. They have 40,000 now. That increase was a faster rate of growth than both the New York City and Boston markets, which is pretty impressive. And by comparison, you know, Brian, we talk a lot about the Hartford apartment market. Basically, since 2014, Hartford's added about 3,000 apartment units, maybe 3,500. And, you know, there's always these new developments in the pipeline, but that goes to show you how much faster the Stanford market is growing. And also, you know, the Stanford market, they're all mostly market rate apartments. Maybe there's a few units that are affordable. Most importantly, they don't have subsidies, you know, like the CRDA providing subsidies for Hartford apartments. These are all private sector financed deals in Stanford. So it's a real legitimate market in Stanford and growing still.
You know, this Spike in job openings, 26%. That's month over month. I'm curious. I mean, that can you just talk that happened just recently. Is that a problem in the sense that we don't even have people to fill the jobs that were already open? I mean, I hope that doesn't mean more of these jobs are going to leave the state.
Yeah, so this one has, you know, even the CAA scratching their head about what led to this increase. You don't normally see a big increase, especially from December to January. So at the end of December, we had about 73,000 job openings. All of a sudden, it shot up to 92,000 job openings. Connecticut was definitely an outlier here. Nationally, the number of open jobs kind of stayed the same. There was only six states that saw an increase, but Connecticut's was by far the biggest. I did ask the CBA what sort of drove this increase. They weren't sure because there's a lot of economic uncertainty right now. So the things that employers are telling the CBA is a lot of companies are holding back on hiring. The CBA maybe thought that there is a thought that there might be some reshoring with tariffs. So companies were getting these jobs ready because they needed to move more of their operations to Connecticut. That was just their best guess. So we don't know, what sort of led to this spike or what it means. It kind of, from my perspective, it just kind of adds to the economic uncertainty. 92,000, that's a lot of open jobs to have in the state. Those are some of the same numbers we have post-pandemic. You know, we were able to get that number down over the last few years into the 70s. So it's not a great sign for the economy because, frankly, there's not a huge workforce out there, a new portion of the workforce that's going to take up these jobs. You know, Connecticut's not growing its population at a rapid rate. We're still attracting a lot of young people to the state. So we'll see. Sometimes these numbers do get corrected. Usually they don't get corrected as significantly as they do the labor numbers, the job numbers. So something to keep an eye on. And if that number stays in the 90,000 range, it's not great for Connecticut.
We're talking with Greg Bordenaro with the Hartford Business Journal here on the Connecticut Business Blend, as we do every Monday at 8:50. Last issue, insurance versus healthcare. Like for me, I don't have a lot of empathy for either. I know there are important industries here in the state, but as the family of five, our healthcare costs. I mean, I don't even know what to say. But they're battling each other, right? I mean, and they're basically because there's inflation and rising costs, and they're trying to figure out who's going to absorb it, right?
Yeah, and part of it is really a public relations game. You know, for a lot of years, it was the insurance companies were the easy target. You know, hospitals were viewed as people there. You know, they're there to help people. I do think that's changed a little bit. So basically, our story was about over the last 10 months, there's been five sort of public spats between insurers and hospitals over contract renewals. Both sides are putting out public statements now, creating websites, blaming the other. Insurance companies are often saying this health system is asking for a double-digit increase. You know, we're trying to control costs. Ultimately, it's the customers that are going to pay these costs so that they're trying to sort of protect the customer. Then the health systems will kind of fire back, say, hey, look at the health insurance companies. They make tens of billions of dollars in profits every year. Why we have a margin of maybe 2 to 3%. So the interesting thing now is that I think more people are looking at the health systems as partially to blame for these cost increases, and not just the insurers. So it's partly a public sort of relations kind of dispute in the public eye, but obviously it's a real world impact when we see the rising cost of healthcare in Connecticut and across the country, really. And not really an issue being talked about too much on the federal level because there's so many other things going on. But I really do think that this is going to be an issue that's going to have to come up again sooner or later.
Yeah, absolutely. Greg, great job as always. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.